Now, I wonder why the camera won't stay initiated.
So you actually do want to, you're not recording now, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
How do you think I get the pre-roll for the show?
Fantastic. Well, you know what? It's radio. You don't need to see my face until I figure out what the hell's going on. So there.
Almost live from across the USA, this is Late Night QRM. Your hosts tonight are Jash, Barry J, Barty, and Michael, the virtual Youper. Tonight, it's a supermoon! Did you see it? We talk cameras, and Jash tells us about some of his special talents. All that and more on Late Night QRM! And now, digitally gathering at the plush QRM studios in Southwest New Hampshire. Here's Jash, Barry J, Barty, and Michael! Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM show number 49 from the southwest corner of New Hampshire. I'm Barry J.
I'm Jash.
And this is Barty from Central New York.
And Michael may show up later on, but he's on call. He's working the ambulance tonight, so he's out on a call right now. If he gets back in time, he may join us. But welcome, everybody, to a gorgeous... it was a gorgeous day here, anyway. So, and it was up in the 60s, I guess, or so, here.
Yeah.
I guess it was 60s, yeah. So...
yeah, it was in the upper 60s here. It actually went over 70 down in Syracuse.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I would think that they'd stay a little warmer. Well, they are a city, but I would think the lake effects also keep it cooler there for a while.
Yeah, they're down in the flatlands. You know, we're on a plateau that's kind of slanted facing the lake, and the lake is directly west of us.
Oh, okay.
So we tend to get the lake effect straight off the lake, where they tend to get it more on an angle.
Hmm. Okay.
They're a bit more inland than we are.
Okay. Wow. So, and of course, last night, and I guess tonight, is the supermoon out there.
Yeah.
And I went out last night and snapped some pictures of it, and learned how to snap a picture of the moon, because you have to set your... aperture pretty low, because even though it's dark outside, the moon is a very bright object. That's what people make the mistake. Oh, I'll go outside and snap a picture in automatic, and of course there's more dark than light, so you get basically a bright dot in the middle.
A big white circle.
Yeah. So it was good practice for me. I took out the camera and the zoom lens and snapped a couple pictures and played around with it, and actually got the features of the moon.
So. Yeah, I went out and did the same darn thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of people doing it, because I posted one of the pictures on Facebook, and I noticed there was about four or five other people that had posted pictures of the Facebook, and it's like, yep, same moon.
Yeah, I saw that. Was a pretty good shot.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same shot I got. Yeah. You didn't have any treetops near it like I did.
Yeah, well, I did take some with the trees coming through. I was hoping the moon would come up over the mountain area, so I could get a picture of, well, there's a way you can take a picture of the moon, so you get the features, and then you take another picture of the mountains and go ahead and let that adjust so you could see the mountains, and then you can merge the two pictures on using Photoshop.
Actually, you don't really need to merge them. You can do a multiple exposure where you take one picture and you hold it there, and then you change your exposure settings and take a second picture, mm-hmm. with like fill lights. That's what I did, so it would light up the trees.
Ah. And,
then you take, but with the when you merge the two together, you end up with a picture of the moon in the sky, and the trees show up. You know, it looks kind of weird though.
Now when you do that, what do you do it in Photoshop, or how do you merge the two pictures?
I've got a Nikon D7000.
Oh.
I can tell it to do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Second shot, just edit out the moon and just get the trees.
Okay. Wow. I have a lowly Canon 3Ti, so it's
yeah, I have a Kodak that comes in a cardboard box.
Mine doesn't do all those fancy things, but
yeah, my camera does more stuff than what I can pretty much understand.
Yeah, it took me a while to kind of. It was a good workout yesterday because I was changing things, but I was to the point. Okay, put it on manual, so I put it on manual, and I'm like, okay, how do I change all these settings? You know, I'm sitting there trying to figure out how to change the settings in the house before I went out there, but.
Now my camera's got like multiple exposure modes, and then it's got like a series of manual modes that you've got already pre-programmed, because you can program the behavior of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So you can control the whole plethora of settings. And I was using mainly the pre-programmed settings, and just because I was out there, I went ahead and played around with some of the automatic settings, and I went and used Shutter Preferred and bracketed the exposure, changing the shutter speed, shooting at f/16 for about 10 different shots.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, you get your camera does a lot more than mine does. I had to sit there and adjust it, and you know, first of all, they said take it at f/11. Well, f/11 was way too dark, and so I had to keep adjusting it up till I actually saw the moon. So I was just okay, I'll sit here. And that's the nice thing about digital cameras, it's like you don't have to worry about wasting film. You just click, okay, exactly. That doesn't look good, click, okay, that doesn't look good, click. I just took a whole range of them and then figured out which one gave me the best picture. And I was smart enough when I bought the camera that I bought a little remote control. So
I've got one of those too that I bought when I bought the D80. I got a remote control for it, which makes it a lot easier than a self timer,
right?
Like self portraits or group pictures that you're part of and stuff.
Yeah,
I shot film for like 20 years before going digital,
mm-hmm.
and it took me quite a while to get the hang of digital, because with film you get so used to studying how different film emulsions will react to light, mm-hmm. and that different exposures and different temperatures and things like that.
Yeah.
So you end up with all this crap in your head about how all the physics involved with film, and all of that goes away with digital.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All totally gone. And at first I was like totally lost. I really just couldn't figure out what do I do without all this stuff. I was like handicapped. I just couldn't quite get my head around just point the freaking thing and shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was just so used to just doing all this stuff, because you know I still have like my handheld light meter that I used to use, because I never trusted the built-in ones and things like that. You know, I had a Gossen Luna Pro handheld light meter that I used for everything. I used to read incident light and directly reflected light and things like that.
Yeah.
And you know, all that stuff. But you can still meter that way, but the meters that are built into these modern cameras are so damn good it blows those old handheld ones away.
Yeah,
because you know they have like they meter across like multiple zones and things like that. You know, mm-hmm. and it's like, man, this is crazy.
I see Michael. Michael's picture just showed
up. There he is.
There he is.
Hey Michael. Hey, howdy.
The virtual Uber shows up.
I don't know if you guys got my messages.
Yep.
I put it right in the middle of the show notes.
Well, that would be okay, too.
I did.
Oh, you did?
You didn't see it?
Oh, now I do. I wasn't looking at the show notes.
Yeah, about 15 minutes ago there, Barry.
Oh, really? Oh, geez. Okay, lesson learned. Look at the show notes.
Well, I sent you an IM in Skype, and I didn't see anything, so then I put it right in the middle of the show notes. I said, well, those for sure see it there.
I see it now. Okay, that's some work.
Okay, I'm going to go grab my bowl of hot and sour soup. I'll be right back.
Go ahead.
Nice.
But I'm here.
All right. Good.
Only hear the pager go off.
Oh, that's funny. Oh,
that's too good. Yeah. Problem I run is I can't find flash cubes for mine anymore.
I'm surprised you can find some place to develop the film.
Oh, man.
Remember the cameras in the old days? I mean, you had the Instamatic. I remember where you used to have, the little bulbs and you'd have to stick them in.
Yeah.
A little thing would pop up, but you'd have to stick the little bulb in. And then, I think the cube was the next thing that came out, which was great.
It was, until it didn't work on that one particular shot, because it's a defective bulb.
And then they started with, it seemed like they're going backwards, but they would have like this rack of lights. The bar that you would plug in to the top of the camera. And they, of course, it was, you'd use them up, they were only good for one shot. So I think the bar had like 10 of them on there or something. So, yeah. And then the Instamatic, then they came out with those little flat cameras after the Instamatics.
The discs, Kodak disc camera, the flat one.
This one took a cartridge, but it was like, I forget what size the picture was.
I don't remember.
The 110.
Yeah, the 110. That's it.
Like yep.
Yeah, the 110
things. They had like little tiny cartridges you could drop in. Yeah. And then they had like the discs that you were talking about that were more like a competitor to Kodak until Polaroid sued Kodak and made them stop it.
Really?
Yeah, because Kodak came out with like this disc thing that was like that would give you instant pictures and stuff. And I guess they infringed upon Polaroid's patents and. It took Polaroid a number of years to beat them and make them stop. Uh-huh. Probably what made Polaroid go bankrupt was all the legal fees shutting down Kodak.
Yeah, well, and then Kodak pretty much put itself out of business because they invented the digital camera.
Yeah, which, if they had followed up on that and just continued to stay on top of it, it probably wouldn't have been such a nail in their coffin. Yeah. But it's like they just kind of like started this thing and then just kind of like let it go,
right.
And everybody else picked up the ball and like ran like crazy with it.
And I think their business plan was basically they made more money on the film and the processing than they did on the cameras.
Yeah, that was totally true. I worked in a camera store, and film processing was an incredibly profitable business for the store and for Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. It was like the cost of the film. Wasn't really much of a profit, but the processing was, and it was big for both the processor and for the store.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a big business.
Yeah, and then of course digital came along. Well, I used to have an AE, Canon AE-1 before that. And
hey, I still have one of those.
Do you? Oh, yeah. I still have it. I have some very nice lenses that go with it. Unfortunately, Canon. Shortly after that, before they went to digital, they changed their lens mount, so I couldn't use them on the newer Canons. And then when they went digital, of course, I've got these lenses now that won't fit anything but the 81.
That's really sad, Barry, because I've got an old Nikon F, and those lenses still work on my D80, and they still work on my D7000. Now, I have to use them in a stop-down manual mode, the same way I do with my Nikon F, They still work.
Huh.
I can mount them on there, and I can use them in a full manual mode. Set the shutter speed myself, and then set the aperture myself. It even has the same match needle display in the viewfinder that my Nikon F has.
Really? Well, good for Nikon.
It's crazy, because I can sit there and turn the aperture ring and, move the needle until it's centered and stuff, and be able to use it just like I used to use my old 2-ton Nikon F.
Wow. The only thing I can possibly look into is I think they have some adapter rings that you can get.
That's what we did on our end. We had a couple of the AE-1 bodies and probably three or four K1000 Pentax bodies. And we bought adapter rings from B&H Photo for Chris's DSLR. They work fantastic, so really? She's been able to use all of her old lenses.
I'll have to look into that because
do they work automatically.
Some of them do, not all of them, but some of them do.
Yeah, these probably won't because I mean these didn't even have autofocus. I mean, the only thing it would do is possibly do the light settings, but
right,
you know. But I still I have like a it's like a 75 to or 100 to 500 lens or something like that. That's a huge honker thing, and it would be great to. Last night I wish I could have used it, and I'm gonna have to look into that. Definitely now that you said that, I will go look into that because, you know, I got these three lenses and I paid pretty good money for those lenses. Well, it's actually the long one is the only one. I have a 75 to 200, which I have a matching one that came with the camera, the Rebel camera I have. And then I got one that goes to 200 that came with the camera. So, but, I'll have to look into that. Because chances are, if you're using that size of telephoto, you probably aren't going to be, it's easy to do manual. It's too shaky to use without a tripod.
That's for sure. So. Hey, Josh, yeah. I can relate to that pose.
Has it been a long night? Have you been working all day?
It's been a long day, yeah.
Well,
I had that pose, but not for as noble, anywhere near as noble a reason. I've been playing Call of Duty since 7 o'clock this morning.
Hey, that sounds noble to me.
Hey, I was on a couple times, and I didn't see you on there.
I wasn't on yesterday. Yeah. Last time I was on before today was, I think, when I saw you online. What was that, Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Since then, I managed to rank up to level 45 on third lieutenant. Or second Barry lieutenant.
Managed to get high enough to be able to put his clan tag in.
I did. I did. I'm a specialist now. I guess they still call me a private though. But I'm up to level 6, so I could join the clan.
Yeah, my goal is today when I started, it was a level 31. So now I'm a level 45, and that being said, I got invited to join a couple of clans because I started getting good at it. So, yeah, you're not half bad, and then of course I had some snot-nosed kids sit there, and I was in one. I stopped playing the general death matches, and I'm playing the general matches, and I started playing a team death match, not the team death match, but hardcore.
Yeah.
And since I started playing hardcore, I think I had some, I don't know, 13-year-old kid tell me I suck. But in a message, he just types back, "Dude, you really suck. You need to take the game back to the store." And I said, and I just type back, I'm like, "Look, I've got shoes older than you, kid. Shut up."
Well, I was reading some pointers online. I found
that's so cool. You're researching pointers. That's
Well, I got to figure out the. You know what? I found a bunch of. It was more interesting reading the comments because I was reading the pointers and I tried them out. Some of them work okay, but there were a lot of comments coming from guys our age. Yeah. Yeah. And they're saying, "Yeah, really getting tired of being shot dead all the time."
Well, one of the things that I have to say made me wake up and smell the coffee, so to speak, was when you play hardcore, like team deathmatch or domination modes, I look for ones that have absolutely no respawn. So you get shot, you die, you're done. All you can do is be an observer. So it's a lot more. The gameplay is totally different when you're playing those modes because, you find a lot of little kiddies that like to run around and do the run and gun and shoot and figure, well, if I get it, I'll just respawn. Well, you don't respawn in real life. If you're lucky, you get to recoup in a hospital if they can put the pieces back together. Oh, yeah. So I like playing that mode because, if I automatically start finding by default you're playing with guys our age, military personnel, those people who can appreciate not getting hit. And all the kiddies, they come in, they get wiped, they're done, and then you hear them complain, "Oh, this is no fun, I can't reach one," and then they leave.
I was just trying to get some points and run around, so I was playing fodder to all the pimply-faced 13-year-olds, but I got, Yeah, I got a lot of points at just showing up, you know. And if I did kill a couple people, then my points would jump up faster. So, and my goal was I just wanted to join the LQRM clan.
Right.
So I did that. Now I got to open up some other stuff. But yeah, I had limited. One night I was going to go play, but I was just so tired from work that I was literally falling asleep. I said, "No, forget this."
I don't know if I'm in the clan yet or not. My military advisors were going to take care of that for me. But
last time I checked, you were at 5, and you need to be 6 to join the clan.
Okay.
So
I'm sure they can handle that.
But yeah, I'm sure you are by now.
What does it
say, they? because I think they were playing the other day, but I don't know whether they were playing NW3, but they were on, according
okay.
to
Okay. See them on, tell them, hey, get to work there. Join the clan.
They've
been watching a lot of anime this weekend on Netflix. So I don't know how much... they're using, well, no, they're not even using the Xbox. They're using the Apple II TV.
Oh, okay. That's funny when you said Apple II. I said, really? They're using an Apple II to watch TV? And
no, no. Yeah, they even had Netflix on that, too, you know?
Netflix is everywhere. I've got some spares for you.
I am still very tempted to go out and get an Apple TV just for the air. What's it called? AirPlay?
Yeah, that actually works pretty good.
Have you had a chance to use it? Because I was actually listening to... I'm about a month behind on our podcast.
Music. I've played music with a number of times. Okay. And, it does work really well. Unlike the original Apple TV, where you had to go through and identify it to your iTunes library... Mm-hmm. This app, the latest Apple TV will just simply go up to the cloud if you're using Apple's cloud stuff. It'll just find your music up there and just play it for you. So it's really nice.
Oh, wow.
Now, you don't have to do anything with your home computer or nothing. If you have it all up in the cloud, it'll just find it and it'll just play anything you want.
Yeah, that's great. We're not boring you, Josh, are we?
Huh? Shut up. I was actually sick on Friday, so that being the case, I'm recuperating. The bourbon's helping.
I was home on Friday, too. It wasn't an off Friday, but I had worked enough hours that during the week because we had our customer up and we were doing fat tests, which is redundant, fat. Factory acceptance test. So I said, yeah, screw it. You're not, you know, it wasn't enough overtime to get paid for it. So I said, yeah, I'm taking Friday off.
I hear you.
So, don't blame you.
Yeah. So it was good trying to catch things up around the house here. I have some chores to do.
So, honey-do list?
Yeah, honey-do list, but we also got we're refinancing the house, and so we got the... This week they're coming to appraise it again, and we were concerned about the interest rates going up, so we hadn't locked in yet, and they've been going down still. So
I've been thinking about doing the same thing because our interest rates are like about 5.25%,
really?
I think we might be able to get lower than that now.
Yeah, we're going for 15 again, and we're going to be like at 2.87 or something.
Wow,
like that.
Wow, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So, and then now, of course I'm gonna. It's lowering our payment, but I'm gonna continue to pay where I am now because I don't. You know, I'm 3 years into a 15-year loan, which means you know, I'm down at year 12, and I don't want to extend it out, so I'm gonna pay more.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I still end at the same time. The guy calculated out at the bank. He said, "Yo, you only have to pay like $35 more a month." And I'm like, "What happens if I pay like $200 more a month?"
Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing. We're on a 30-year loan, but we've been throwing extra money into it almost every payment.
Yeah,
and you know, we would like to refinance on a 15.
Oh, you could probably easily do that as long as as long as you're not underwater. But I just saw a thing on the news today.
No. We're in pretty good shape.
Oh, then you won't have any problems. Cause,
we bought the house back in 2004.
Oh, that's right.
And the first couple of years, we just stuck with the standard payments, but after that, we started throwing more and more money into it.
Yeah.
So I think we should, we're pretty much ahead.
Yeah.
I think the house was, I think it was like a little over $100,000 when we bought it. And the payoff now is like down in like the 60s. So we could probably do pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. For people that are underwater, supposedly there's a couple Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans that they even people underwater can get if they want to refinance for the lower interest rates. So I know a couple people at work that are underwater. So you know, and they wanted to refinance, but they can't right now. So I got to tell them about that tomorrow. It's like, yeah, you probably could. So. Anyway, Saul, today, bad news. George Lindsay died at age 83. And for those who are saying, who the hell is George Lindsay? He was not Gomer, but Gomer's cousin, Goober Pyle.
Goober, yeah.
And Andy Griffith. And so when they spun Gomer off to Gomer Pyle USMC, his own TV show, they brought in Goober to replace him at the fill-in station.
So
that's a shame. He was also on Hee-Haw. If you remember those
in the day,
yeah, Hee-Haw was the laughing for rednecks, as Barty said.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Dealer sample selling used cars. Just call BR549.
Yeah, what's funny about that is when we have phone numbers kind of similar to that here. I mean, in Jeffrey and Peterborough and Keene, if you live in Jeffrey, you have the same three numbers. I'm not talking about the area code. I'm talking about the local code.
Exchange.
Yeah, the exchange. And so a lot of times you hear, especially old timers in Jaffrey, what's your phone number? And they just give the last four numbers. Yeah. Because everybody knows it's 532 in front of that, you know.
Yeah. Well, in Copper Harbor, it's the last three numbers.
Really?
About 95% of the people, they're first, you know, that's the we got one exchange for that whole part of the county. Yeah. And then everybody else, their number starts with a four.
Wow. And I remember when we left Virginia, they just started that you had to dial all 10 numbers all the time.
Like Massachusetts, you have to dial literally the, you know, one, the area code, the exchange, and then the number.
Yeah.
They have so many area codes there.
Yeah. I want to say five.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, depending on where you live, how your phone service is.
KLC 471.
Jeez. Oh, I remember the days when we, you know, like my phone number, the exchange number was always started with, it was called like Mitchell 6, which you dialed MI6. You had to actually go up, which was 646, but, you know. But in the day, you would always say, oh, my phone number is Mitchell 6, and I won't give the rest of it because it's still my dad's phone number. So.
I remember growing up just north of Concord, New Hampshire, in a little town called Penacook, that everybody had shared phone lines. There was no such thing as having a private phone number.
Party lines.
Party lines.
Yes.
Yeah, there was like numbers of people that were all on the same line. And when you call that number, everybody's house would ring. And when somebody answered, you'd have to say who it was you wanted to talk to. And if one of them were on the line, then everybody else would hang up, hopefully.
Yeah, people would eavesdrop. I remember my grandmother lived up in the Poconos, and she had a party line. And yeah, you listen to the ring. Everybody had different ring counts or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to listen. You couldn't just answer the phone when it rang. You had to listen to how it was ringing, and you could be able to tell if it was a call for you or for someone else, depending upon how it rang. And of course, you know, we had like these 2-ton phones that were made out of like some kind of polycarbonate stuff.
Yeah. Well, my dad.
Seriously, you pick up the receiver and it was like a 2-pound receiver.
My sister is very irritated with my father right now because he is still paying rent on two phones in the house. Because if you remember, you couldn't go out and buy a phone. You got it from the phone company and you paid rent on it, a monthly rent.
And that's nuts.
And he's still doing it. He still has two of the original phones. Now, they are push-button phones.
And oh, wow. They're stepping right up.
Well, that's pretty modern. I never saw a phone that you rented that was push-button. The ones that we had were all dial phones, and they didn't have a typical phone jack. It was like a 2x2 square yep. block that had four pins, and it would plug into a four-pin outlet.
Yep.
And that was how it connected.
Yep. And exactly. We got, for some reason, outside of Philadelphia, we were kind of like the early birds for the touch-tone phones. Because I remember, I think we got our first touch-tone back in 1963 or so. And but it was not like your normal touch-tones because it didn't have the pound sign or the star. It just had right. the touch-tones for everything else. And the only thing on the last row was the zero. for it. But
I remember when the hottest phone was when Ma Bell figured out that teenage girls would blab for hours, and they came out with what they called a princess phone.
Yep,
it was this really cute phone that was pink or robin's eggshell blue, this soft pastel color. And you could plug in with a very, very small square modular jack, and you could just talk for hours on that phone.
Yep.
It was still had a rotary dial, but yep. they called it the princess phone, and they were marketing it towards teenage girls, and it sold like hotcakes.
Yep.
They couldn't keep those things in stock.
People
were putting in extra phone jacks in their house. Ma Bell made millions installing extra lines in people's houses for those things.
Yeah.
Not to mention selling them the phones.
My sister had one of those. I know it well.
Yeah, so did mine.
And then they came out with the next thing they came out with after, of course, the normal push buttons, they came out with, what the heck was the name of it? But it was like the dial was on the hand receiver instead of on the body.
That's the way the princess phone was. When you picked it up, the dial was on the handset. It wasn't on the base.
Oh, was it? Okay, I thought the original princess phone, it was very thin, but it still had the dial on the body. But
There were two styles. There was one where there was the dial on the body, and then they went to the dial on the handset.
Okay.
So there was both.
I remember my first phone that my parents gave me in my room was a yellow trim line. That's what it was called.
Jeez. Trim line, okay. Yeah.
The trim line those. Phone where you pick it up and...
You got to have a phone in your room? God, you were lucky.
Well,
see, we had one phone in the house.
Exactly. I was like that. I have the one phone in the house, and damn it, if you were going to use it for anything that was frivolous.
Well, not only that, but
what do you mean you're going to call your friend? He's just down the street. You go to his house and talk to him.
You'll see him at school tomorrow. You can tell him then.
Exactly, Jash.
I have my own phone, and as my sisters moved out of the house, because I'm the youngest in the family, and they're both, my oldest sister's 11 years older than me, and my other sister's 9 years older than me, so when they left, I got their rooms. So I basically had this suite of rooms.
The princess phone in every one.
Well, no, it was a trimline phone. Please.
Sure, I remember the princess phone. We know what was really princess going on, Barry. Right there. No, he really had a princess phone. He had a suite, but every room had a princess phone.
He had his princess phone, one for each ear, and then he had three.
And then when I was a kid, remember
Barry's going to disconnect us. We better cut it out.
Oh, there was technical difficulty.
Well, Michael. do you remember the little suction cup pickups that you could get and put on the receiver of like the handset of the phone? You could record
it up to your cassette recorder. You betcha.
By conductance, pick it up. Well, I discovered that you didn't have to just do it at the receiver. You could basically put it down on that. You remember the little square box you were just talking about with the four prongs?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could stick it on there, and you could pick up every phone in the house.
That's because there's enough inductance in the four-wire telephone line,
right,
to induce the signal into that pickup. So right. Yeah.
I mean, there's enough inductance in those four-wire lines to run a microwave oven. Yeah.
But yeah, my parents were quite upset when they found out I was sitting there eavesdropping on all the phone. I guess that's why I did what I did in the Air Force. Really? He said, "Oh, we know what you guys are going to be. We know what you're going to work on."
We got a letter from your parents.
A place for you in his administration.
Oh, jeez, yeah. So yeah, I was bugging phones at the age of 9. You know,
I'm proud of you.
Oh, jeez. Oh well.
Well, hacking phone systems is one of the ways that some of the biggest entrepreneurs in the tech industry got started. I mean, that was how Jobs and Wozniak got started, was playing around with those phone phreaking boxes.
Right, right.
True. You
make illegal long distance calls for free.
I believe
that's how they financed the Apple II.
I believe in the old days when you had touch tones. The touch tones would use the touch tone to figure out what phone number you were calling, but you still had to physically press a button for it to register as a phone call. And so those little things, you could just go up and take like a tape recorder and play the tones through the line, and you wouldn't get charged for the phone call. I mean, that was the basis of some of those phone freaking boxes. Right.
Yeah, it worked really well, too.
Yeah. There are some guys that were talented enough, they could sit there and just do it with a voice and make it go through, which, you know, back in the day, I mean, it's like a dual tone. How can you mimic a dual tone? But it was good enough, I guess, to get through the system. Anyway. Well,
one of the highlights of my youth was actually memorizing the dial tone associated with each button, so I could listen to someone dial a telephone number and tell you what the numbers were just by the tones.
Damn, that's talent.
Wow.
I'm impressed.
It took me a while, because I had overheard someone on a radio program say, okay, we're going to dial so-and-so to see if they're the winner, and you hear boop, 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 and they're like, and then the next time they want to do it, they said, oh, we need to turn it down, because there's some people out there who'll know what the buttons were that we pushed. And I thought, you know what? It was on a Philadelphia radio station. God, I can't remember what it was, but I won Philly's tickets. Anyway, it was...
well, that makes it worth it.
It was exactly... So I went ahead, and I said, okay, I want to learn it. And I just sat there, and I kept hitting the buttons and trying to remember the sound of each number over and over and over and over and over until eventually I memorized them. I could tell you what your phone number was by the sounds. All right, we'll go one better.
Useless talent now.
I'm
very impressed.
Pretty much every car, almost every domestic car in the United States, probably from about the range of 1973 to 1987, I could tell you what car was following us just by the headlight spacing in relation to the front turn signals. In a rear view. And that was very handy when you're 16 years old driving around in a semi-souped-up 72 Monte Carlo doing way beyond the speed limit, and you can look in the rearview mirror and say, yep, that's a Chevy Caprice.
That's a Crown Vic.
Really.
And I could do that from miles away. Yeah, good days, good times. That saved my butt, that little skill, more than once.
Of course, those were the days, too, when the cops actually had large lights on the top of the roof instead of these little micro-thin things that, you know, you can't... Is that a ski rack, or are those lights? Yeah. You know, and then all of a sudden they light up, and they light up at the same size.
Oh, that's not a ski rack.
Well, I'm just telling by the actual spacing of the headlights and the shape of the headlights in relation to the marker lights in the front of the car.
Right, right.
Not the light car.
No.
I brought a jammer. That wasn't nothing. My dad didn't appreciate that too much when you made my first radar jammer. You know, steer with a bread loaf board and a set of instructions that you ordered out of a back of a magazine, and you're soldering on resistors and diodes and transistors and oscillators, and you go, I wonder if this works. And then you find that same spot where I personally had gotten a ticket, and you're like, turn that puppy on and see it, and just look for the reaction. And when they see him smacking the side of the radar, go,
as long as it wasn't making you look like you were constantly going 80 miles an hour. That
Oh, my. Good times.
Yeah.
You never want your kids to find out about.
Yeah. I don't think you get away with that these days either, because I guess the new radar is pretty sophisticated, and they can use it while they're moving and everything else now. In the old days, man, they had to be off on the side of the road, not moving. Yep. And even then, they said some of the radar, if the wind was blowing, they'd clock trees doing 120.
Yeah, I don't think they have that issue anymore.
Yeah.
I know, like Virginia, they triangulate. So if you're shooting a radar detector while you're driving through the state, they will triangulate and be able to pull you over and say, all right, you're running a radar detector, and demand it right there and then on the spot. I believe it's Virginia and Georgia.
Yeah, Virginia. I couldn't get a radar detector until I moved up here.
Yeah,
and not only that, but they have a radar detector.
Yep.
And then, but I have one now up here that has a radar detector.
Detector, right? It tells you they're using it. So, and then it goes into hide mode.
Right. So yeah.
It sniffs out if they're sniffing for radar, and then instantly goes into hide mode, so then they can't sniff out yours. I just find it's easier to unplug it from the cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
It's not worth the hassle and slow down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And if you're in Virginia, hide it. You know, put it in the back or put it in luggage or something like that, because if they ever search your car, even if you're not using it, and they catch you have one in the car, they take it. They are illegal to have in the car, period.
I like living in a small two-county area where the state police and the sheriff see me coming, and if they see me coming fast, they go, oh, there's Mike. He must have a reason to be going fast. And they wave at me as I go by. The dangerous part is when I'm not in my Jeep. And I, you know, if I'm in my wife's truck and forget, whoops. Jeez. Now, I've gone by the state police in my Jeep. I probably shouldn't say on the podcast, so I'll just say at due regard, in very high speed, high rates of due regard.
Yeah,
and he's, you know, you can see him starting to put it in gear, and then look at it and then just wave at me. And say, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, go on, Mike.
Hey, do you have lights on your Jeep or?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, because everybody up here has red lights, which was strange because where I grew up. You had blue lights. All the volunteer fire companies had blue lights, and the police had red and blue.
Red
lights.
And blue.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got up here and I thought it was weird because I kept seeing these goofy cars with red lights. I said, they're not.
You know what got me? When I was traveling to New York, and I was shooting down the interstate, heading down towards the Pennsylvania border, and I didn't realize I saw these red lights. You know, way up the flap, 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 flip, 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 way up in the distance.
Yeah,
going down 80. Was it 89? I think it is. It goes down towards Binghamton area. I guess it's 80. I think it is. In any event, I'm thinking, well, why is the fire chief out? Nope, that's the New York State Police use nothing but red lights.
Really?
Yep.
Michigan State Police have one huge, big red, like the old ones.
The round ones?
The big, I'll take a picture and show it. I'll send it to you.
Wow.
it takes a little getting used to.
Actually,
one huge, big red one.
Actually, Pennsylvania State Police had it that way. I don't know when they changed it, but I remember because it was basically clear, and then they had a red and blue light, and it spun.
Yep. This one's red only. There are some red and blue ones up here, but the state police just have this one big rotating red one.
Yeah.
You can't miss it.
Of course, now they got those ones that are like the size, like I said, the size of a luggage rack, but they put out enough light, and the bad thing about those is they can turn them off on one side and only have them on in like right. front facing, so you or back facing, so you can't tell if you're if they've got somebody stopped, but they don't want you to know they got somebody stopped. You can't tell,
right?
So,
well, for safety's sake, the idea too is they could leave them on flashing in the back. Mm-hmm. And the wig-wag lights, they leave them on facing rear, so oncoming traffic knows that, okay, he's got someone pulled over to the side of the road.
Right.
You know, give them some space, so on and so forth, but they shut the wig-wags off in the front because they're absolutely blinding, even for the officer when they're up there trying to, you know, ask simple questions and look for shadows in the car if it's a suspicious type of situation.
Yeah.
And it throws a lot of bad light, so they turn on the white lights facing forward, right. The blue wigwags and back.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes sense, you know. It's a smart way of doing it to keep the officer safe.
It's just an amazing piece of technology now. It's how that all works.
Yeah, not to mention the size of the alternator you got to put in the car to be able to run it all. Basically, it's like a small power generation plant.
We've got two per ambulance. Two yeah. large alternators per ambulance.
Easily, and probably two batteries at least. One on the other side of the front of the. If they're Fords, there's one on either side behind the headlights.
Yeah,
and they're huge power draw, you know. But then again, too, for diesels you need it. My diesel had two batteries in it as well.
Yeah.
Sorry about being gone. I had to take a phone call and catch up on my medications.
Oh,
what have I missed?
Oh, we were just.
Did I miss the iPhone talk?
No, we haven't. No, we're still. No. We were still talking about lights and different types of lights that serious? The police and stuff use. And
we're talking about your state. Oh, I mentioned about how all the state troopers have.
The fascist state of New York.
Yeah. I didn't say that. You said that. But how?
Well, I'm not from this state, and basically, I'm only living here for employment. But if I had my druthers, I'd be back in my native state of New Hampshire. But this is working out pretty good for me because right now, the doctors I've run into have taken pretty good care of me, and you know, the employment situation and everything. So. This is where I'm going to be for the foreseeable future, but it's not necessarily my first choice. Trust me. I would much rather be back in good old New Hampshire.
Huh. Well, you may find it a little different when you come back.
Yeah, well, it was kind of different from when I grew up.
Yeah.
Last time I was there,
yeah.
Which was part of the reason why I wasn't really too broke up about ending up out here.
Yeah.
The tax situation's a hell of a lot better, but well, the property tax isn't.
Yeah.
I'm paying half as much property tax as I was in New Hampshire,
yeah.
And I have twice as much house and property. So,
but to be fair, you've also paid
because they tax the hell out of everything else. So.
I was gonna say you've got an income tax probably right, and you got a sales yes. tax.
A bad income tax, a bad sales tax.
Right. Well, because you're paying for New York City.
Well, that's us. Do they have separate taxes?
Yeah. Well, they have separate taxes, but I'm sorry, they do drain upstate New York.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Most of their money goes down there.
Right now is that they don't have enough electricity, so they are wanting the upstate region. To fess up money to put this huge power line all the way across central New York, all the way down into New York City, so that they can get more electricity. And, like, they're going through, like, people's farms and things yeah. like that, and all these people are like, hell no. Hell no. We hey. Want to keep our land the way it is. Hey. We don't want our forests taken out. We don't want our meadows taken out. We don't want our hay fields taken out. The hell with New York City. Let them go build their own reactors. They don't need to go suck stuff from here.
Yeah,
so it's a big fight right now going on.
The same thing's happening here in New Hampshire, actually. They've got the Northern Pass, which people are
yep.
fighting. And that's coming down from Canada.
To power, actually, most of it's Connecticut, Massachusetts area, isn't
yeah,
it, Barry?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Massachusetts and Connecticut. So we don't even get any power off of it, but you know, all the landowners, of course, it's coming right down through the northern section of New Hampshire, you know, through the mountains and everything else, and they're fighting it left and right. It's like, yeah, go make your own power. Yeah. So the same thing's going on here, and it's like, it's crazy.
And the big fight growing up when I was a kid was putting 93 up through the up past the Old Man of the Mountains, because there was the big fight that if you ever extended the interstate past the Old Man of the Mountains, that he would fall off the mountain.
Guess what?
Up there, and guess what? He falls off the mountain.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, he fell down.
They're stating that that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Well, that's a kid included back on.
Well, I got to admit, 93.
When I was a kid, people were so pissed off about that stuff that they were actually vandalizing the construction equipment. They were doing things like putting sugar in the gas tanks and things like that. That's how angry people were.
Wow.
We're not talking about teenage kids. We're talking about grown adults going out there and vandalizing construction equipment to stop the process. That's how mad they were about this.
Sugar in the gas tank doesn't work on a diesel, by the way. You need to use something else, but I'm not going to say what it is on the podcast.
But the other big fight was, of course, having liquor stores near state borders. That was like something that pissed Massachusetts off to no end.
Yeah.
They hated the fact that we were moving New Hampshire state liquor stores closer to the borders. They've been talking about putting toll booths at the borders to try to recoup taxes lost from Massachusetts residents crossing the border to buy liquor cheaper in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Because they would come up into New Hampshire to buy it cheaper than they could get it in Massachusetts to avoid the state taxes on liquor.
Or you mean 38% tax on a bottle of bourbon in Massachusetts? You come to New Hampshire and you go, what? I have to use one less $10 bill to buy this.
He'll drive untold distances to get out of those taxes. You know?
I think they're upset also about putting malls and Costco's right on the border.
That's a more recent occurrence, but you know, back when I was a kid growing up, Massachusetts was so pissed off that we were putting state liquor stores near the Massachusetts border.
And, you know, come to think of it, no matter where I cross the border, it seems like there is a state liquor store right there.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah.
And even into Vermont, too.
Just head west from Keene, and right before you cross the river, what do you see? A New Hampshire state liquor store.
Right before the bridge. Nice one, too.
Yeah.
Well, they're passing a bill now in New Hampshire where they're, I was just reading about it too, where they're looking at putting three sites for three casinos.
Really?
In the state of New Hampshire. Yes, sir. Rockingham Park area would be one around Salem.
Rockingham has been arguing for one for a long time. They quit doing thoroughbred racing because they said it wasn't profitable without gambling.
Right.
And that was like years ago.
Well, Massachusetts is now trying to, they're voting on the idea whether or not they want to put in a casino down there, because they know if New Hampshire opens casinos, plus the no tax status, plus the fact that our liquor's cheaper status, it will be a vortex of cash pouring out of the state of Massachusetts and into New Hampshire.
Well, yeah. Considering that, they charge everybody that lives in New Hampshire and works in Massachusetts, they charge them income tax. Pretty fair.
Yeah,
you get exactly. Some of that revenue back.
I talked to a couple of people who lived in Mass. Like, well, you guys get all that back. I'm like, no, you don't.
Actually, if you can work with your employer, and if you have work days that you actually spend outside of New Hampshire, mm-hmm. You can get part of that back. I mean, if the days that you work outside of Massachusetts, those days you can get that money back,
right?
By including all that stuff, but you have to get your employer to give you a form, and they have to state the number of days that you were working outside of Massachusetts. So if you have a job like Barry J or I have, where we go out to customer sites and spend 2 or 3 weeks to a month at different sites numerous times during the year, and it adds up,
you can take all those work days and report them to the state of Massachusetts and say, I was working outside of Massachusetts, so you need to pay me back the income tax that you are charging me for those days that I was working outside of Massachusetts, because mm-hmm. this income is not Massachusetts income.
Right.
So you can get some of that back, but you have to have an employer that's willing to go and give you a statement that verifies that you were outside of Massachusetts during those time frames.
Hmm. Right. Most employers won't, and in my case, I very rarely are not working in Mass, so you just learn to eat it. Eat the tax. Yeah.
I'm in the same boat, because I was there. I was working down in Hanscom, living in Nashua, and there was a lot of times that I was like all over the place. You know, now I wasn't even in the U.S. a lot of times. I was overseas. Right. And some of it I was able to get my employer to verify for me, and other parts I was not. And because, you know, most employers, they don't, you know, they're Massachusetts companies, or in some cases they're outside of it. I was working for a company that was actually headquartered in Tennessee, and they couldn't understand how mm-hmm. a state would tax you for employment outside of that state. And I was trying to explain to them, well, you know, a lot of my employment is in that state because I'm working at Hanscom, but a lot of it is outside the state when you send me to other places. And some companies would be like, yeah, okay, we understand that. Mainly it was when I was working for Massachusetts companies, they understood that, yeah, okay, you're working outside the state, you don't live in the state, and we'll go ahead and verify that. So for those years that I worked for that type of company, because I worked for DRC out of Andover, and they were willing to do that kind of stuff. My supervisor would sign off on it, and it was all good. But other companies, I was working for one that was Jacobs Technology out of Tennessee, that was in charge of a contract at Hanscom, and they had no concept at all about what the hell I was trying to talk about. So I couldn't get any kind of verification from them. There was a few times that my immediate supervisor would sign things, and I could put that into my tax return, and Massachusetts would accept it. But generally, it's kind of hit or miss. But it can be done if you have a proper employer that is understanding of your situation.
Right, and if the queen had balls, she'd be king. My point being, most employers. Most employers won't do that, and you know what? It's not worth the effort. But you know, it still gives me. Plus, I would, you know, there you go. I was just mentioning the fact that I wouldn't have as much to bitch about.
Oh man! Well, shall we move on to another topic? The iPhone, the new iPhone, rumors are coming out about what the new iPhone is going to look like, and we're still talking about potentially using liquid metal. However, one of the people that invented liquid metal said they're 4 or 5 years away from actually using that, so it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be something or not. They're claiming, yes?
The funniest thing about that is that there are some reports that are saying that Apple is already using that for some parts of the iPhone, like the little tray that holds the SIM tray is allegedly already being made out of that material.
The little thing, I heard that the little poker that helps you
get the tool. You're right.
Yeah, that's made out of it. But they're saying, that's what makes me think, but maybe they are still a couple of years away from actually using it as the back of the phone. So that could be. There's also rumors that they're going to be using a new Gorilla Glass on the front, which is harder and thinner. And also the screen size will probably go to 4 inches. And they'll be doing that. They'll be making the phone a little bit bigger, and the screen will go from side to side with very little border around it.
Interesting. What size is the screen now?
It's 3.5 inches.
Oh, okay.
Right now,
okay.
So it would add a little more, and it would also put it in a 6 by 9 reference, which would work with all the high def material. And let's see, what else? Of course, they'll probably put a better camera and stuff in it, but cool. 16 by 9. That's what I meant. 16 by 9. Sunny. And what else? I think they're, and they're also talking about the docking. Maybe a smaller docking. Yeah.
Oh, really?
That kind of got me.
Yeah, I'm not really thrilled about that, but they said it would give them more room inside the phone if they reduced the size of the docking port. And of course, I've got a lot of things that my iPhone plugs into right now just fine, which means now I'm going to have to get an adapter to continue to use the other things that go along
gadgets.
With it. Yeah, the gadgets. And, you know, I'm talking clock radios and, you know, mounting things like that, you know. So that'll be...
That's something else. I had gotten confirmation this week that my employer, it's a hard confirmation. We are all getting issued iPhones, and we are going to be able to... Well, I'd like to burn my black by dropping in a...
Oh, come on. You know what you're going to do. You're going to put it in the little plastic bag with all its things and put it in that drawer of where...
I will happily give my BlackBerry back to the company once I transfer all my contacts over to my new iPhone.
It's going to go into the drawer of misfit phones.
No. I'll probably work fast for it back for some reason or another, and I will happily return it back.
Yeah.
When I heard that, I was giddy like a schoolgirl, and they said, yeah, we're all going to iPhones this year. It's in the budget. It's already a done deal.
Yeah, I think iPhone or Apple's pushing more to try to get into the business world.
Yeah,
I think the big thing that caused that change to occur was being compatible with Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. They have the security.
As soon as you were able to open that to a Microsoft Exchange mail server, it was a done deal.
Yeah,
but that's what happened with BAE. As soon as that happened, people all over the company, you know, here at this site that I work at, were all switching over to iPhones. And I'll be one of those people doing that later this year. My BlackBerry contract expires, I think, in August. And if I can be patient till October, the iPhone 5 should be out. And potentially with the liquid steel back case. Not that I really care about that. I just want Siri.
Yeah.
But,
well, hopefully they'll take Siri out of
Siri and, I'm in love with Siri.
Hopefully they'll take Siri out of beta, because there's been a lot of complaints about Siri. Because
I think it's there's a lot of back end work with that is required with that.
Right.
That I don't think they were anticipating such a heavy use of it.
Yes, exactly, and that's what happens. It's half the time Siri can't get back.
You know, you got people that do silly things like my son that ask it for the meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
But it has an answer for that.
Yes, it does.
It has two or three answers for that.
Galaxy. It's awesome. You know, and like, if you push it too much, it will eventually tell you, look, I'm only, how does it word it? I forget how he said it, but he says, if you push Siri too much, asking it questions about things that, you know, that an automated thing can't answer, it'll come up and tell you that, hey, look, I'm only an automated thing and I can't answer these things. If you don't stop this, I'm going to report you.
I'm going to report you. I'm going to tell on you.
Oh, that's too much.
Yeah, my oldest son has an iPhone with Siri. Yeah. And, you know, he's as big a geek as me, and he just pesters it with questions all the time. And he sends me emails saying, this is what I asked it now. This is what I asked it today. You know, and he tells me the stuff that it tells him. And it's like, I can't believe that Apple would put this kind of crap in. You know, it's like, all right, how do we politely tell these people to screw off?
That's what Siri says.
Well, I got my wife a 4S, and she's got Siri, and, you know, it's like, for me, especially since I spend so much time in a car, I would use it for doing texting while I'm driving, because it'd be a lot easier, you know, you can, you know.
Not me. I'd be like my son asking it endless stupid questions.
My wife never uses it. I mean, she's got it. She never uses it. I said, you can use it. You can just give it commands, and it'll tell you, you know. I don't understand. So,
I try the same thing with my BlackBerry, but all it does is freeze and lock up. So then I use other choice words and tell it what I think about it.
I was very disappointed when I got the iPad 3 and it didn't have Siri. It has dictation, which is really kind of fun, because you can do things like turn it on in a room where people are talking, and it'll like halfway record most of the conversations. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you end up with this text
box like,
full of all weird stuff.
If you patch that in to a forum of all of us playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 with strangers, can you imagine what the dictation, what it would write down people are saying? That's probably some pretty rude words. Colorful combinations never thought up before.
Really? Jeez. Well, I don't know whether you guys, if you watch a lot of video podcasts like I do, chances are you're watching at least one video cast from Revision 3, which was a company that was actually started by Kevin Rose and a couple of the people from Tech TV. Well, the news came out this week that the Discovery, which owns the Discover Channel and some of those, has purchased Revision 3 from those guys. And
are you serious? I didn't hear that.
Yep, and for about $30 million. So,
wow.
I don't know
that's
whether
cheap.
Yeah, but I don't know whether that's a good thing or bad thing, because if Discovery leaves it alone and they just want to get into the business of the web, that's fine. But I'm really leery about you know, an old
welcome
media.
Welcome to This Week in Google and 17 Children and Counting.
Yeah, I'm really worried about old media taking over a significant chunk of the new media.
Thanks, doing a location check.
Sorry.
You're working. You're doing important work.
But I'm kind of, you know, yes, it gives Revision 3 more money to do things, which may be good, but I'm worried about the influence, because usually when an old media style company comes in and takes over new media like that, they like to impress upon them what they want them to do.
So yeah.
If you start seeing some of the talent fleeing, then you'll know that that's what we saw, because that's what happened when CBS bought CNET. And CNET used to be the big one that had, you know, they were the original guys out there that were doing stuff on the net. And then CBS came in, and they've been slowly but surely changing it into an old media style.
Yeah, that's true.
Thing. So,
you know, it'd really be kind of cool if they would take some of the things that are on Revision 3 and start putting them on cable and satellite systems, you know, so people that were a little less connected than folks like us could see some of these shows, because they might find some of them interesting.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, that might be a positive thing, as long as they still provide it on the web.
Yeah, and leave them rather autonomous so that they can continue along their own path the way they have been.
Right, because you know, I would be concerned.
These entities have grown and developed audiences based upon the content that they've been developing.
And where you can get it.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, because it's the kind of thing that you can that you can enjoy at your leisure. You don't have to be stuck to a time schedule to watch it like you do on the average television kind of thing, where it's only on at a certain time at a certain day.
You
can download the stuff at your convenience and watch it when you want. As long as you keep that available, that would be good.
I just received an email a day ago. It was pretty interesting. It says Wall Street analysts are predicting the end of free video streaming in the near term as media and cable companies regain control over online content for themselves. Basically, they're hammering where TV stations are buying up all kinds of podcasts, and they're also condemning Netflix, and they're pulling their stations from being able to sell shows to Netflix and Hulu Plus, because they say it cuts into their profit margins too much, that they're going to force people to have a prove that you pay for cable or satellite TV. before they'll be allowed to watch their channels or their shows, period.
Yeah. Oh, HBO and who owns HBO? Or does HBO own other?
I think they're a separate entity.
Are they Viacom? They might. I don't know. I don't know who owns them. I won't say. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, they do that with HBO Go, and now I understand there's a Max Go, which I think Cinemax is owned by HBO. But that doesn't make any sense. Okay, now what? In order for me to get it on the internet, I have to subscribe to your
channel.
Your channel on regular TV. And it's like, well.
Then exactly. So why would I even bother watching it on the internet then? If I'm that's kind of the case. Here's this case in point: the fall of Nickelodeon, the popular children's cable network that used to guarantee high ratings and lucrative ad revenue. Recently, the network has fallen off the ratings cliff. Some analysts found the reason why: Netflix. Really? All the cartoons that people used to watch Nickelodeon. To see are all on Netflix, so they stopped watching Nickelodeon, which means all their ad revenue went away because they weren't selling anything. Along with many other cable networks, licensed a number of the series to Netflix for on-demand viewing. In households with young children, parents increasingly chose the on-demand Netflix experience for family viewing over traditional cable or satellite channels. So they're trying to gobble up everything and basically put them out of business or make you double pay.
I kind of predicted that something like this would happen because that's what happened with radio back in the 20s. I mean, it sounds like they go back, but you know, when radio first started off, it was a bunch of amateurs on the airwaves, and then some of them were using it like amateur radio people, you know, for communication and testing and stuff. Other people presented programs and played music or talk, you know. And then, you know, the company started buying this stuff out, and now, you know, you know, the amateur radio part of it is very strictly limited frequencies, and it's for emergency services only, basically. I mean, that's the gist of it. But and you can't do entertainment, and you can't do talk shows or even broadcasts. And, of course, everything else is owned by giant entertainment corporations.
Well, yeah, but radio used to be very, very free, even as recently as the 60s and the 70s. Because you used to have, you could go to any city in America and find local AM and FM stations that were totally autonomous and were totally independent. And they were, like, very, very unique from city to city. I mean, you would have, like, a Boston feel for, like, the Boston, a lot of the Boston stations, because obviously they would play, like, Jay Giles Band and Aerosmith, you know, and, you know, typical Boston area bands that Boston area people were into. You know, and you might go to Chicago and hear, like, different bands, but they were very, very autonomous until, like, the 80s and the 90s when people like Clear Channel started buying them up and making all of their playlists synonymous. You know, so, like, radio from every city in America has the same 20 songs that they play all day long.
But Barty,
that wasn't the case in the 60s and the 70s.
Back in the 20s when it was brand new, you, as an individual, could start a radio station with not as much money that you have to shell out now. Today, hey, if Barry, you wanted to start a new radio station, that would
you realize you just said Barty back in the 20s. Now, I can't, I mean, he, you know, he might be up there, but I don't see him.
No, no, but. No, I'm not saying Barty was back in the 20s, but I'm saying
back in the 20s when you wanted to start a radio show.
What I'm trying to compare is when radio started back in the 20s, it was a lot like new media on the internet today. Right. Where, you know, we're a bunch of guys, we have another job, but we can sit here and produce a show and put it out for everybody around the world to see, and it really doesn't cost much at all to do that.
Right.
Okay. I see those days disappearing here pretty quick, potentially, where they all of a sudden it's going to be too expensive to stream, or it's going to be too expensive to upload. Download will be cheap. Upload's going to cost you money.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It's scary to think about, but right. It makes a lot of sense.
And you know, if bandwidth gets expensive, although lately I've been seeing it still going down in price, you know, on the websites. It used to be you had so much you could stream out or you know, dole out, and then you'd have to pay extra money. Now I've got an unlimited plan, but I could see that disappearing. As soon as old media is getting the whiff now. They're like, wait a minute, what are all these people watching? They're not watching us. We're losing revenue. And the other thing that scares me about the Revision 3 thing is, if you've noticed on podcasts and videocasts that do have commercials, they work them into the show. It feels like part of it. It's not just and it's something that goes with the show. If you notice what CNET does now, CNET's commercials are plug-and-play commercials from CBS. You know, brought to you by a Ford dealership or...
Right.
You know, and it's just the standard blah-blah commercial you see on old media.
TV.
And it's just right. Plugged into the podcast.
Well, I hope we never have Summer's Eve commercials on late-night QRM, because I'm just going to be bummed about that.
Damn. Okay, let me call those guys.
It depends
up.
How much they pay us.
If they want to buy late night QRM for $30 million and play Summer's Eve commercials, brothers, I'll tell you what, man, I will be one Summer's Eve promoting fool.
Oh, I could make a comment right now, but I won't.
About Summer's Eve.
Come on.
Yo, bitches, you got to check this stuff out.
There's something about Josh being a real... Well,
what? Oh, careful. You are the birthday boy.
That's right. Just trying to find a way to afford to buy an Apple computer.
I was looking at those this week.
At the Apple computers?
I was looking at them last week and the week before. You look at them every week.
I'm still, realistically, I'm on the bubble right now between a Mac Mini and a MacBook Pro. That's why I'm researching.
Well, hold off on the MacBook Pros, because there's rumors of new lines coming out this year.
Well, there's also looking at the MacBook Air, which is way more affordable. And I was really seriously thinking, you know what? It sounds goofy, but like you, Marty, you said, you stash your pennies aside, and then when they come out with a new product, you go down to the Apple store and you pull the trigger and buy it.
Yeah, but you spent your 58 cents on your truck.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea behind it being is I found layaway.
Oh, there you go.
And you can actually lay away any Apple product you want.
Really?
Yes, you can. So I went
ahead.
Did
not know that.
Believe it or not, Best Buy does it, but not in the state of New Hampshire. And then I went online to Sears. Sears has layaway year-round. And you could walk in there and say, I want that MacBook Pro 2. You put 10% down, and it's 12 payments over, I want to say, is it 12 or 24 weeks?
Hmm.
When you make your last payment, take it home with you.
Wow.
So it breaks it down. It makes it much more easy.
Yeah,
to get into the world of Apple.
That would be a good thing. You know, you realize as soon as you get your first Apple, we'll be all switching to something else.
That's why I'm not doing it right now.
But that'll be when the first viable Linux desktop comes out.
That'll never happen. So yeah.
No, we'll go. Gee, Windows finally got it right.
Oh no, that'll never happen.
Josh, what are you doing with that Apple thing, man? Metro's the way to go.
Yeah, I quit. I'm all done. I can't keep up. I admit it. I'll see you online. I'll shoot you in the head.
Well, shooting Barry in the head is pretty easy. You just got to find what corner he's crouching in.
Yeah, I got to learn the art of ducking, too. So. Okay, the next topic was, and this is just a short one, I thought this was kind of interesting, that the Facebook IPO is going to happen, I think, on the 18th of this month, and Zuckerberg...
Let's all get rich!
Zuckerberg, some little snotty-nosed kid who didn't even finish his college degree at Harvard and basically stole an idea from a couple other people, is going to make at least $846 million. That's just him.
I hate him. I don't even have
to carry it away because I can't see that from my address.
That's incredible. And the funny thing is more and more people are complaining about Facebook, and I have a feeling that it is going to go by the wayside here a little bit, as long as something else will have to come up and replace it.
Yeah, screw that.
But people are really getting upset about the apps that basically, you click on something that somebody sent you, and it says, "Oh, you! In order to see this, you have to use this app." And if you use this app, you're basically giving them permission to look at your entire friend list, look at all your information, and the big one that I don't like is, and get to post as you anytime
they want. Yeah.
And you know what, guys? Says something like that, I say no.
I listen to you guys. I really, really do. And ever since we had the Uvu moment, thank you, Michael, I can honestly say, and thank you very much, Barry J, because you went ahead and pulled the trigger for the video Skype. You got video Skype? I closed my entire Google Plus account.
Really?
I want no social media whatsoever. Period. End of statement. And that was the only thing I had lingering. I had two things, LinkedIn and Google Plus. Guess what? Two are gone.
Well, but Josh, we're going back to using Google Plus Hangouts here.
Yeah, well, good luck for you then.
Actually, I'll listen. I find that Google Plus is the one that you have the most control on, and they haven't tried to force me to do anything I didn't want to do.
I think
they learned their lesson with what was the other thing they had out before that failed miserably?
Buzz.
I can't think of the name of it now.
Buzz.
Buzz, yes. Buzz.
Yes.
Buzz, I think they learned their lesson on that. And when they came out with Google Plus, they said, look, you got complete control over this. You can make it as public as you want or private as you want. And we're not going to force you to do anything.
Trust nothing.
Well,
if it comes from corporate, don't trust it.
I'm with Josh. I agree with Josh totally.
Well,
don't trust any of these bastards.
Well, I don't trust any of them, but if you want to communicate with people pretty much across the internet, you got to have to trust some of them because
I'm trusting Skype. That's about the limit of it right there.
Microsoft owns Skype.
You can always trust them. They'll never lie to you.
Nope.
But, with Facebook, I also do not allow any apps or any games or any of that kind of stuff to have access to any of my information. So I've got a lot of friends that, get kind of perplexed because they want to play games with me or they want to, like share apps because there's, like, some kind of a LinkedIn kind of thing that Facebook has. And I won't... participate in that, and I tell them it's because they require that I give them all the total access to all my personal information, and I choose not to. And if I don't give them access, they won't give me access to their app. And it's right. Like, well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't need that app if that's what their requirement
is. Right.
I've often tried to find the pound sand up your ass button on my computer, and I couldn't find it. But you want all your app, all your contacts from everybody you know. Geez, I can't find that button. Realistically, that whatever it is.
With you, Josh. We're on the same wavelength, my brother. I don't trust these bastards at all.
Nope.
I don't trust Google. I don't trust Facebook. And I won't give any more of my personal information to either of those entities for any reason.
It's not that I'm a conspiracy theorist. It's just, it's too much. You're giving away too much power over your life.
Amazon doesn't ask for all this crap from me.
Exactly.
They don't want access to my contact list or anything like that. Apple doesn't want access to those things.
Yeah, but those two got your credit cards.
But you buy stuff from them. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
You know, realistically, it's like, oh, I can find a, you know, the book on tape that I'm looking for or on iTunes or what have you.
I have a Prime account with Amazon, so I can watch like old reruns of like Farscape. You know, I mean, gee, I mean,
well,
come on.
Amazon
I have
does
to get my credit card so I can watch Farscape.
I don't know
what behind by 2 years on that.
Amazon does keep some of your data because when you go on to shop at Amazon, they bring up stuff that we saw that you bought this before and you might be interested in this.
A ton of stuff. Every time you buy something, they make a note of it because they are constantly sending me my wife and I, because we have the same shared account. They are constantly sending things that are in line with previous things we have purchased. Well, like when they have a new Nikon lens that's on sale, they don't hesitate to email me saying, "Hey, look, you can save $50 on this lens. Is this one that you're interested in?" Yeah. And I'm like, "No, not necessarily, but for $50 less, I might be."
The marketing works. No, I thought about this. I was going to a local grocery store. It's a Shaw's. And they said, "Do you have your Shaw's card with you?" And I'm like, "No."
A fine British company.
And exactly, but the point being is you scan your Shaw's card, they throw you a couple pennies off for whatever the hell it's supposed to be you're buying. Toothpaste and pickles, whatever. The point being is now you're in a database that you're Barry J, ID number, blah, 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 bought pickles on this day, you bought toothpaste on that day, and what brand, how long, basically, they can track how long you took in the store, how long you stood in line. Walmart does all this now. If it's your ATM or your credit card, they track every single solitary purchase you make, and then they find a trend. And then they can associate that trend for any number of marketing reasons. That's why I like cash. Who are you? Joe Schmo. Where do you live? United States. Can I have your phone number? Let me see. Where's that button again for GoPay?
BR549.
Exactly. You know, I've actually done this when Radio Shack used to do this, too, way back in the day.
God. Every What's time. Your, yeah.
Exactly. What's your name, your zip code, and your phone number? My name is Abraham Lincoln, and I live in Washington, D.C., and give me my shit. I want to get out of here and stop asking me questions. I hate that.
What are you going to do when they do away with cash, though?
It's not just big chains that are doing that. There's a very, very small supermarket chain. I don't know how far they extend, and I know they're outside of New York. But there's a chain called Big M, and I happen to prefer London broil steaks. And I've been buying them from Big M stores because their good butcher meats. Department is very good at what they do, and I like their steaks. So I buy a lot of London broil and pay for it with my credit card. I received an email yesterday telling me that my local Big M store, which is a very small little market, it's not like AP, you know, like A&P used to be or anything like that. It's very, very small. They're in like little rural areas. And they sent me an email letting me know that the nearest store to me was having London broil steaks on discount this weekend. So, of course, I went and got one. And barbecue only, for dinner.
They're only green one side. That's why they're discounted. No.
Yeah,
you're right. A lot of folks are doing that. And it's just, you know what? I don't want to be another. Like Michael, you know, had said the same. Radio Shack used to do that. They've been doing it years before everybody else.
Yeah.
Every single purchase.
Well, they used to have that name, that phone number. They collected information about you with the excuse of letting you have one free battery every month.
I remember that.
Not alkaline. Just one heavy-duty battery, not alkaline. You had to pay extra for alkaline.
Absolutely. You got it. It's like, look, I'm here trying to buy some 1K ohm resistors, buddy, and a CB antenna. I don't need to give you my life story when I graduated high school to buy this stuff.
Would you like the good, the better, or the best version of that?
Oh, I hate it so much.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next story, which is actually there just kind of for fun. CERN scientists were asked a question by a reporter, and they said, "What would happen if you could stick your hand in front of the CERN beam?" That goes like, there.
What kind of asshole would want to do that?
There's actually a video, and basically the answer from several scientists said, it would hurt really, really bad.
It would probably have said something like, why? Why don't you want to have your hand anymore?
Well, not to mention that in order to put your hand in front of the beam, you would be very close to it, and your entire body would be irradiated because the radiation field is like several yards beyond the beam. So not only would your hand really, really hurt, but yeah, you'd probably be dead before they turned it off.
Really hurt.
So it was an interesting little video, and I just stuck it in there. There's a link in the comments.
And the next question for next week will be, well, what happened if you actually got in this particle accelerator and turned it on?
Well, and now we come to the final part of the show where Michael is going to show us his bald spot.
Hardy makes that comment like, in the other show. And it's like, it's Monday.
Josh, you know? Josh, you don't have to bend your head over. It's pretty much a 360 degree thing with you, Josh.
I'm cooking dinner, and I'm thinking, what the hell was Barty talking about? So I take my iPhone, and it goes click.
He's taking pictures of his head.
Oh my goodness, it's the first time I've seen the top of my head. I had no idea.
I'm sorry, Mike.
I make a post on it.
I'll never mention it again.
And all my friends are going, you didn't know? it's not like it's really bald, Mike. It's just thin up there. Like, okay, well, all right.
How tall are you, Mike?
I'm just under somewhere between 6'2", 6'3".
Maybe you're just too tall for your hair.
Yeah.
You know, like a tall mountain, you know, they have like a tree line where above this certain limit, there's no trees. You're just getting too tall for your hair.
Well, you know, it's back at the occipital node of my head, and it's not something you can see on your own. And I didn't ever thought about taking a mirror.
I just thought it was like, funny that you're taking a photo. You're taking a snapshot with your iPhone.
Oh, here. Let's see here. Okay,
I was waiting for you to post it.
See?
You bet this wasn't a video show. That would be
you can see it.
I can see it. I wouldn't call that a bald spot.
Michael is showing us the picture he took of the back of his head.
Yes.
And yes, he has a thinning spot.
And Barry's back.
He's probably just here.
Yeah, I'm back there. No, I know I don't have one. I check it every other week or so.
So did I. Then I realized when it was as smooth as a baby's bottom, it was time to shave my head.
Okay. Of course, most people here know that I'm. You're talking about your comment that I'm at. I come in at 6'8", and I don't think I've lost any hair, but I do have constant snow on the top of it now. So anyway, with that, we do have a musical guest tonight.
Oh, there was one other item there.
Oh, what? Oh, I didn't see that. Sorry. Wedding in Da Harbor.
Yeah, two of my friends got married yesterday. And actually, if you look at the Late Night QRM folder on Dropbox, you'll see two photos from the wedding on the shoreline of Lake Superior. It was in the upper 30s, low 40s with a hefty wind yesterday blowing off the lake. Now, for the locals, yeah, we were used to that. All the people that came up for the wedding, they were a little surprised, I think. There were a lot of really cold people for the ceremony, but it was a great time. But I have one particular story. They had this wedding on the lakeshore, and then they had a burrito bar as the reception.
So in the community center, they had to set up this big burrito bar, and then out they had a beer tent with local microbrewery beer, really good stuff. Of course, I was working today, so I had to limit my intake. But so I drove there, and my youngest son said, "Well, you know, I'll take my bicycle out there and meet you." Well, he didn't find me. He should have, but he didn't find me. And after I didn't see him, and I knew the burrito bar was closing soon, I pull out my iPhone, and since we don't have cell coverage up there, I brought up the Skype and gave him a Skype call to his iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. So we still have a network up there. And I tell him, "Okay, you know, I'll come home, I'll pick you up, and we'll get you to the burrito bar." So I zip home, pick him up, zip back there, and they're just getting ready to tear the burrito bar down. And here's a scene right out of Animal House. There's this big old guy, if you can imagine Pluto from Animal House, just kind of walking up to the table. Yeah, it looks both ways, and I can kind of see a little bit of a swagger there. So he's been enjoying the beer. And he pulls out the spoon and goes right into the hot salsa. Right, oh, at the bar.
Oh, jeez.
And then he goes like, kind of gets this look on his face, and he takes his hand and goes right into the whole bowl.
Oh, oh God.
And then he takes the whole bowl.
Oh, no.
I mean, we're talking like big mixing salad bowl full of salsa, hot salsa. And my son looks at me and I said, "We'll get you something to eat somewhere else." And I'm thinking, you know, back at the, because this wedding outdoors at this nature conservancy on the shoreline, and at one point during the ceremony, I mean, it was an open wedding, so there were just people from all over, and I'd say probably 10% of the audience had beer bottles in their hands as they're watching the wedding, you know, but at one point, just before they say the vows, one big guy walks up back in the woods and you're shh. I think it was the same guy.
That's, oh, man. Well,
that's my wedding story. But as I said, I threw a couple of pictures up on the late night QRM folder. So you can,
okay, we'll have to take a look at this.
The groom is the guy that built all those bridges I showed you.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I've mentioned both of them actually in the past.
Right. So, okay, with that, our musical guest tonight is Rick Harris, and it's his song "A Funky Wadiddy," and it's jazz, kind of. So, anyway, with that, we will see you next week, and thanks to all the military out there, both here and abroad. Right now, and we hope you get back home to your family and friends real soon. So with that, I am Barry J.
I'm Josh.
And this is Barty.
And I'm Michael the Virtual Youper. Till next time. We'll be right back.
Samson, speak! Good boy.